Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday.
What's up today?
Well, one of my New Year's commitments, and I'm not saying resolutions, one of my New Year's commitments was to focus on the things that inspire and enlighten my life more than those things that actually discourage and bring me anguish. Because I looked back over last year and I kept feeling like I was being drawn to the dark constantly, that it felt like there was this heaviness that we talked about week after week. And so I said, I'm going to make a concentrated effort to draw myself towards those things that really inspire me and make me feel more hopeful. And then to take that energy and to spread that out in the places that I can via the show each week, via my classes, through my friendships, through my family, in any way that I can, that I want to be more of a beacon of light than kind of a professor of doom or whatever that might be. Because it's interesting how easy it is to feel discouraged and disheartened and depressed. Like, it's really easy to go to those places, more so now than ever. Those feelings come up very quickly, take very little effort. And it actually takes a lot more energy and focus to embrace joy and to seek out awe. Like, those feelings actually take energy, which is sad. I don't know if that's the same for you, but, you know, maybe it's a bit temperament and maybe it's a bit environmental. But for a lot of people, it's a lot of effort to look for the good. So that was kind of my New Year's resolution. So, or not resolution, my New Year's commitment. So for today's show, I'm really feeling this overwhelming sense of inspiration by the love of family. The family of mankind, the families we choose to make and create in our communities, and the families of our birth. So I want to talk about the impact of the stories and the history of our families and how having a sense of pride and purpose and meaning can be kind of that ballast that ends up supporting our individual mental health and well-being. And when I think about family, I think about that family of mankind that we're all a part of, and those stories we tell about ourselves as a humanity or as a country or as a community, and then all the way down to that microenvironment of our family of birth and those stories we tell about who we are. Because all families have some sort of lore or history that comes up around the holiday tables or at funerals or whenever the families gather. There's either some connection to a famous person or some famous event or something that kind of gives the family its identity. So I want to focus on those. So can you think of one? Is there a Hadley family legacy?
Well, no, I wouldn't say a legacy. It kind of shifts over the years because, you know, you have friends that when you're 5 years old, you have friends that die or disappear or just don't become part of the family. You know, grandmothers and people like that go away. And then you have new husbands and new boyfriends and new in-laws and things. And so, yeah, it's always shifting. My legacy, I've always been an absolute hater of big gatherings and groups, and there was always a Christmas Day thing with like 15 people, which I just hated. Christmas Eve was just me and my parents and maybe a grandparent or two, and I craved those. So I'm probably not the best person to ask about big family reunions and achievements and legacies.
So there isn't like one family story. I mean, there's a family story my mom has told us over the years about one of her ancestors when the Revolutionary Army was coming through. They wanted to take his horses to help with the efforts, and he refused to, and they punched him out and took his horse anyway, that he was kind of a reluctant participant in the Revolutionary War. Like, funny stories like that, you know, that kind of pop up at different family events.
Nothing strikes my mind other than, like, did you see what Grandma did last week?
That kind of thing. Well, at least the story, there is some communication. Yeah. There's a reason to get together and even tell the story. But that's where I'm going to focus today, and I'm excited because I lured my daughter Kirsten into the studio with me today to talk about family history and kind of our own experience being part of a family that actually has quite a long history. She's the sixth generation of our family business. And so I wanted to get her take on what it's like to kind of carry that mantle of being the sixth generation and being a part of a family that has a family business and all that that entails. And I often think that I know all of her feelings about this. So it'll be interesting to see where exactly she goes with it. And then we're going to open up the phone lines and find out what your family story is, or if you have a legacy story, or if there's something that ties you to history. Because somewhere in the recess of all of our families, there's something, warts and all, families are never boring. And most of our stories tend to be stories that might be make us a little infamous or make us cringe a little bit, but there's a lot of family stories that actually make us feel a lot of pride. So that's the direction I'm going today, and we will open up the phone lines. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. You can be part of our conversation at 805-781-3875. You can also find out about our show by visiting our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. And as a matter of fact, if you check out our Facebook page today, I've uploaded an article that we'll be talking about today on the show. You can find me by email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also visit our website, thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. We're right at the top there. And if you'd like to subscribe and get our shows uploaded to your device each week, you can visit Apple Tunes or NPR One, search for A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and the shows will show up week after week. So I'm looking forward to this conversation today, and we'll be back to take your calls.
A telephone wakes me in the morning. Have to get up to answer the call. So I think I'll go back to the family.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, and we're going to go back to the family today and talk about those family legacies and family history. And as I mentioned, I have my daughter Kirsten with us here today in the studio. Hello, Kirsten.
Hi, Mom.
I think you can call me the Reluctant Therapist while we're here.
Hello, Ms. Therapist.
Yeah, exactly.
Mrs. Therapist.
Mrs. Therapist. Or Professor is fine also. It'll be a little more formal.
All right. Noted.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So I talked about at the start of the show that my New Year's commitment is to kind of move towards those things that enlighten and awe and inspire my life a little more instead of kind of the dark that's easy to go to. And this week was a great week for it. Like it just happened day after day, things came up the last week that really kind of opened my heart. Yesterday was Martin Luther King Day. And so I had an opportunity to kind of peruse. Every channel had something about Martin Luther King's legacy, and it always makes me feel so inspired, and I get so emotional looking at the things he accomplished, listening to his words. And I was thinking about, you know, the dream and the goodness of people in the face of adversity, that if you look at how shameful our history was at that time, it's easy to just kind of fold up and think, oh my gosh, we don't deserve good things as a country. But then you see the efforts of ordinary people coming forward to stand up and fight and resist and to have their voices be heard and to change the course of history. And so that reinvigorated my sense that really mostly people are good. I believe that mostly people are good and want good things. And then on top of the Martin Luther King Day experience, all of the articles that are coming up about the upcoming Women's March this weekend. On Sunday, there's a big march scheduled for Las Vegas, Nevada. And there's also a march scheduled for Washington, D.C. And this year, the marchers are focusing on voter registration and the midterm elections and resistance and really getting, you know, the vote out and having the people's voices be heard. And then locally on Saturday, we'll be having a rally at Mission Plaza in San Luis Obispo from 12 to 4. The rally is called Hear Our Vote, Voices of Resistance. And there'll be lots of speakers and performers. And so that also makes me feel excited and inspired. And again, that the ordinary person can make a difference in the world. And when we come together, we're mightier than we are when we're alone. And then this weekend, I was lucky enough to see Steven Spielberg's new movie, The Post. And I don't know if you're familiar with the movie.
I saw the nominations for it.
Yeah, lots of nominations. So seeing the movie was fantastic. It's broadly about the first female newspaper publisher, Katharine Graham, and her courageous agony and her decision to risk her own prosecution and the loss of her family's 100-year ownership of the Washington Post to publish the Pentagon Papers and pretty much expose everything that was going on in the Nixon White House. And so this movie was just, everyone in the theater stood up and clapped at the end, which is always thrilling to be in a room.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when people get that excited and clap at the end of a movie. But it also the part of the family story, seeing the family legacy. And at one point, Katharine Graham says to her daughter when she's trying to decide, do we publish his papers? Do we risk losing this whole family business? She goes, I don't want to be the one who ends the legacy, our family story after generations and generations. And that really stood out with me considering where I wanted to go with the show today. And just again, an ordinary person in an extraordinary time making a decision and a choice that changed the course of history. Mm-hmm. And then there was an article in the New York Times earlier last week about keeping the family tree alive. And it was, the article itself kind of focused on wealthy families and the passing down of inherited wealth. They talked about the Brown family started Brown University and an Italian family who I think makes wines, and that they could look at their family history back for 11 generations or, you know, over 100 years, hundreds of years, and how that legacy and that family history, that inherited wealth, kind of bonded the family together. But the thing that I found really interesting about the article was that kind of at the heart of the article was that the continuation of the family legacy, whether it was a business or a foundation or reputation, was more about the building of this family identity, and that family members generation after generation were, I'm sure the wealth is very nice, but it was the story of being a part of this family that gave them a sense of purpose, that these families had a mission statement, like what is our point as a family? What is it we're trying to do? And so for members of the family that married into the family or were born into the family later, they learned kind of what this family history was, and it gives them a sense of continuity, a sense of grounding, a sense of purpose and meaning. And so the point of the article at the end, the researcher that was writing it said that these families actually demonstrate and strategies that they use to stay together that all families, any families, can utilize to help build strength in their own family system. He didn't use system, that's my word, but their own family unit. And then the last thing that inspired the show is a bit of my own pride and part of the reason I asked you to come in. And so if you'll just indulge me a little bit, was that this weekend in the New York Times Magazine, there's an article called Fine Lines Inside One of America's Last Pencil Factories. And I also linked this on the Facebook page. But this article is about our family business, General Pencil Company.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting to see. A photographer named Christopher Payne came to our factory over the course of the last year and took incredible photos of our American Pencil Company. And it's in the New York Times Magazine in print and online. And over the weekend, it was actually the number one most popular article on NewYorkTimes.com.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It was really exciting press for our little pencil company. And I think right now there's a huge shift to the country and communities rallying around American businesses.
Yeah, and American-made products, mm-hmm. and people wanting to see that. So yeah, I am feeling the pride as well. And so all of these things coming together, of course, centered around the idea of family and how families identify themselves and who they are. And I don't know, this the strength that comes from having a common goal or a common mission. Because in family systems therapy, in my world, one of the primary things we look at is that patterns of behavior, our work that we do, mental health issues, our physical health, our personalities tend to be passed down from generation to generation. That when we want to help families thrive in this moment, we go back into their family history, two or three or four generations if we can, and look for those patterns of behavior and see what's been passed down. And it helps families, one, not feel like they're alone, that they see that there's a family history of either doing this work or having this temperament or being interested in this, or also struggling with depression or anxiety or alcoholism or addiction, that these behaviors are passed down. And so having this article and, you know, knowing that we're a part of something that's six generations long and looking at those patterns of behavior, I just start thinking, how do we help all families kind of find that story that links them together? Because unfortunately for a lot of families, when they look back over their history, they tend to point to the negative things. Oh, alcoholism is passed down in my family, or, you know, we struggle with mental health issues. But it's equally as powerful to look at those things that unite the family in different ways, whether it's a long history of teachers or people who've been committed to military service, or a family history of doing community service or enjoying, you know, cooking or meals that bring the family together. So I just been curious to know with my listeners, what is your family story? Is there some nugget? Is there something that stands out to you that kind of gives you a sense of pride and a sense of connection to your ancestors or to your family history? And what is that? What is that mission statement or purpose your family has? And so I'll start with you, Kristen. When I talk about like mission statements and purpose, when you hear those words, what do you think of?
Well, one of the things in that article about the Brown family that you were talking about mm-hmm. you know, what is consistent with these legacy family businesses. And the thing that the research showed was that these families who have a business they pass down, they actually, the ones they studied who've lasted through these generations, they actually all put family first. That mm-hmm. was one of the things the article said, was that even though they have this business that they all want to keep going, the family is the number one priority.
Like beyond the business itself.
Right. So the business is great and we'd like to keep it going, but not at the risk of the family.
Mm-hmm.
That resonated with me, because thinking about our family growing up, and even the family I'm growing now, my husband, my daughter, and I, family first is kind of, we never had that written down, but we always felt growing up that our family, our inner circle, was a bonded core. And then everything around it was kind of noise and it was nice. But when we were in that circle together, it was game on, the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that growing up. And I thought that was interesting. And we, with our family business, I also feel like as a greater family, keeping a business going, whenever we sit down and have conversations about the business, it is family first. We mm-hmm. want to keep the family, we want the business to survive so that the family can thrive. Mm-hmm. And the family is the most important thing. So that's one of the first things that comes to mind when we talk about this.
And so General Pencil Company has been around since 1889.
Technically 1863. We were incorporated in 1889, but have pencil making history in our family since 1863. And we have a factory in Jersey City, New Jersey, that's exactly 101 years old this year. The building itself is 101 years old. The company's been around a little longer. And pencils are a very... You know, there used to be over 15 pencil companies in the U.S. alone when the company, back in the days when it first started. And now we're one of the last. We're the only company that actually is manufacturing pencils from start to finish. So we...
In the United States.
In the U.S., mm-hmm. right.
Because people always ask us, are you the Dixon Ticonderoga? So no.
No, we're a general pencil company. And yeah, we're family owned and we have right around 50 employees. And it's something that I started working in right after college as kind of a, you know, graduated in 2008, wasn't sure what my path was. And after 6 months of kind of a trial run, it clicked and it seemed like the right fit for me. And now I travel the country doing sales and sell pencils.
You do. Well, and your boss is my sister, your aunt, mm-hmm. and so, your grandfather mm-hmm. is your boss.
Yep.
And your uncle is your boss.
Yep.
So how is that from your perspective being, you know, we gather for family events, Thanksgiving and Easter and just weekends and basketball games. I mean, we tend to kind of gravitate together often and family business conversation tends to come up at all of the gatherings as well. How has that been for you?
It's rewarding, truly. It feels like, especially now that I have a child and I still am working, I always say that it's the only job I would ever want to do that would take me away from my daughter that I feel okay being away from her with. You know, I feel okay being away from her because I'm building a business that's for the greater good of our family. And so there's challenges always, but we're kind of the family business, the family members in the business, we're always on. There isn't really a true day off.
No, or a delineated work day.
Right.
Because at any time,
right.
someone's got a conversation.
Right, or so you're in a store and you see your products on the shelf and you see that it's kind of crooked and you're just shopping at Michael's Arts and Crafts for, you know, some tissue paper, but you happen to walk by the pencils and you see your products crooked, so you have to go fix it. And we're always on as the family members in the business. And so yes, at social events and every family holiday turns into a lot of times we'll preface it with, I hate to talk about work, but, mm-hmm. and then we share something really exciting that happened with a customer or a sale we got. And so it's never ending.
And so is that the good and the bad mixed
together?
That
is the good and the bad.
Yeah. And so when you were growing up, what would you have said was the family story, the stories that stood out in your mind that identified or defined the family you belonged to? And did you even notice that?
As our immediate family or the greater?
The grander scheme, yes. The whole extended group.
Oh,
or do you
gosh.
Remember when you first recognized that there was more than just our immediate family, that you were part of something that was bigger than just our nuclear family?
Yeah, I always felt like one of the things that made us a kind of part of our story was that we were always, there was never any secrets. I mean, every family has secrets, but there wasn't, no one harbored resentment. People, we were kind of vocal. And so part of our story is that we were going to say exactly how we felt and then be frustrated for a minute and then move on. And so part of, I feel like the narrative of growing up was you say how you feel, you put it out there, and then we move on. There's no resentment in our family. And that's not really a story. That was just more of a value, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I think we all bonded over it. I felt like our family was strong growing up. I always pictured us as a strong family because we could communicate.
Mm-hmm. And a lot was held back. Or if it didn't get communicated directly, person to person, you told someone else who then...
You knew they were going to hear it 5 minutes later.
That somehow it was going to channel. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is my daughter, Kirsten Wytovich. Our names now, once we get married, we kind of move past. The Weisenborn name is my maiden name. And that's part of the General Pencil Company. And you're a Barrett Wytovich now. And so one of the things that they talked about in the article about family legacy, which I found interesting, was again that the time together is so important and kind of that planned time, intentional time together, that one of the families, a grandfather somewhere along the way had set aside money instead of leaving, you know, individual inheritance to people. He set aside one pot of money that the family was to use for a yearly reunion of some kind.
That was interesting. They sent 60 of the family members out on vacation every year with this set, every 18 months.
Oh, 18 months.
They had that designated. I thought that was a great idea.
It was. And it wouldn't take a huge amount of wealth to do that, you know, because it could just be set aside for a picnic somewhere at a park mm-hmm. where everyone gathers. But it's just someone initiating the ritual or the tradition and making it happen. And then it all focuses around that one grandfather, that one grandmother, that one aunt who says, you know, makes the proclamation. Then you have, you know, Mama Hill Day or whoever it is every 18 months that kind of becomes part of the family story. And again, it's all about kind of the effort that goes in because our lives are so busy now and there's so much going on. It's so easy to just get swept up in trying to maintain our day-to-day lives, that the effort that goes into connecting with extended family members can feel overwhelming. And we don't necessarily love every person. I mean, we probably have some love for them because we're connected, but they might not be our favorite company or the first person we want to hang out with. So part of the work is how do we find love and appreciation for those people we're connected to? Because it's more about the overall continuation of that family story than each individual's personal picks they have on someone.
I also I think about that family story, mm-hmm. and I think that in order to know what your family story is, you have to have at least one or two people in the family who is aware enough to start identifying that story and sharing it. If you have everybody living in the family kind of individually or in their nuclear family and then they come together and have a holiday and then you part ways, it's hard to identify your family story or what is that thing that bonds us together. But in our family, it happens to be you who does identify, hey, everyone, this is our story. Or also not just the one who identifies the story, but the person who pushes everyone a little bit to spend that time together mm-hmm. because it's so easy to write off family events or gatherings. You have to have a couple. Also, your sister, my aunt, also mm-hmm. is very committed to getting the family together. And having those people that are aware and like sharing stories and passing down stories. And you're always telling my cousins and the kids in the family, here's who we are and this is our family rule. And even if it's something silly, it starts getting shared over and over again.
Right. And when we talk about there are three family rules.
Oh, my goodness. There's three family rules, if everyone's curious.
Because I know I said it's not this lofty thing that our family rules that have been passed around generation to generation. Mm-hmm. Can you name them to make sure you're on?
Of course. Huh? It is always pack a bathing suit. So wherever we go as a family, have to have a bathing suit in case we see a cool swimming hole or we're near the beach. We have to be ready to swim. Number two is always take small bites because, you know, fear of choking.
Exactly.
Which now it's not as funny now that I have a 2-year-old.
Now you understand the rule.
Yeah. My daughter says little bites. And then third is don't be lame.
And that is the overall rule of life in our family. Just don't be lame. Don't embarrass the family. And so I keep thinking, like, how do we translate this idea of, you know, because not everyone has a family business that kind of bonds the family. How do we find ways that all families can find that link? And I also think about the importance of the connection between the younger generation and the older generation, because we are a society that does not value the elderly at all. And there's a lot of fear about aging and growing older. And so I think it's easy to kind of push elder family members kind of out of the way, and the young people are just busy in their own lives and what they're doing. And the importance of passing on that oral history of the family, those stories. You know, one of the greatest things about grandpas, and it's, you know, legendary because it's written in literature, or if you put it up, most people can resonate, that the beauty of becoming a grandpa is that you tell stories that go on too long and you repeat the stories.
And they might be embellished.
And that is your, you know, gift of aging, is that you get to tell these darn stories over and over again. But there's something beautiful in that, because that becomes part of the family story. It's like, oh, watch out. Grandpa's going to pull you aside and tell you the fishing story again. In our family, it's like, how long until the tennis story comes up about Kirsten? Or like that importance of embracing the stories that those who are older in the family have to share are values that have to be supported by the parents. You know, they have to say, hey, go spend time with your Aunt Jean, or go sit down and talk to your uncle, or go spend some time with your grandpa and listen to those stories. And even if you hear it 50 times, you're going to know those stories, and that'll be the thing that sustains you. But again, that the whole fast-paced technology-driven part of our society, I think, really makes it challenging for families to pass along the values that are important to them.
Which, one last thing about this is, probably not the last thing, but when you asked about our family story, even though we have this funky boutique pencil business that's very complicated and bonds us together, when I think about our family story growing up, it's not, oh, we're the pencil people. That's kind of secondary, mm-hmm. now that I think of it. Which is interesting, kind of ties into the article.
Right, that it doesn't have to be, the family story doesn't have to be linked to a foundation or great wealth or any sort of business. It really just has to be centered around something, either a mission statement or a sense of purpose or community outreach or an activity, some tradition that someone at some point claims this is who we are as a family, and then that starts the legacy. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and we'll be back to take your calls and to continue this conversation about family at 805-781-3875.
The next time we see each other, maybe years and years from now. Family reunion, got to have a family reunion. Family reunion, it's so nice to come together.
Elizabeth Barrett, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. That was the OJs in Family Reunion, if you're trying to put an era to that 1970s. Isn't that a great song? Really fun to listen to. My guest today is my daughter, Kirsten Barrett-Wytovich, and we're talking about family history and family legacies. And I started off the show talking about wanting to focus my energies this year towards those things that feel inspiring, that feel optimistic, that feel enlightening and give me a sense of awe, and then to kind of pass that energy out, and hopefully it inspires more light and energy and awe, because it's really easy to feel dark and anguished and depressed right now. There's a lot of things going on that make it challenging to get up every day and feel a lot of hope. So I thought, let's make the effort this year to bring more inspiration into our lives and to talk about those things that actually make us feel good. And so I was, you know, so inspired, as always, listening to Dr. Martin Luther King's words yesterday and remembering all the great work he did and all of the millions of people who had to step up at a time when things were really dark in our society, when we were not at our best as a nation, but they came together and joined together and through the strength of their convictions changed the course of history. And now with the Women's March coming up again this weekend, there's going to be a big march in Las Vegas and another one in Washington, D.C., and a local rally, all ordinary people coming together to get out the vote, to have their voices be heard, to make a change in a time that's very dark. It makes me feel excited and inspired for the future. And then if you haven't seen the movie The Post, With Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. Please go see it. It was a wonderful experience to be in a theater of people who leapt up the end of the show and everyone clapped. And I think it was wonderful to see the power of the press being able to change the course of history. And on a personal note, I really resonated with Katharine Graham's difficult decisions to put her family business on the line and her own freedom and risk her employees' lives to do what was right for the country. And then finally inviting my daughter in to talk about an article that was in the New York Times this weekend highlighting photos of our family business, General Pencil Company, that's been around since the 1800s. And my daughter Kirsten is the sixth generation pencil maker. And so I thought it'd be fun to hear her take and perspective on what it's like to be part of a long family history. And we'd love to hear from you as well. 805-781-3875. Do you have a family story or something that gives your family kind of a sense of identity or purpose that you hang on to that kind of motivates and inspires your family moving forward? Or do you have a family story that everyone kind of knows? I mentioned earlier that my mom tells a story about the Revolutionary War, a member of our family, the last name, I think it was Reed, was it? That
sounds right.
That got punched out and his horses were taken because he was a reluctant participant. Like, what are those stories that you have that are part of who you are today that that connect you to multiple generations of your family, and how does that make you feel? 805-781-3875. So, what was it like for you graduating from college and kind of coming into the family business? Because it wasn't what you intended to do.
No. I graduated, and my aunt, who's the president of our business, said, I said, my dream's to live in San Francisco. And she said, well, why don't you come work for us for 6 months? We need a little bit of help, and then you can live in San Francisco for 6 months. And I said, ooh, okay, fun. And that fun adventure quickly, it became very clear to me very quickly that there was an opportunity for me to help support the business, and also I kind of enjoyed it. And so that about 6 months into it, I went to my first big trade show, and it's a international trade show that has art materials retailers from around the world come. And I went and I helped set up the booth, and I worked the show for the week. And then at the end of it, my grandfather, who's the CEO of our business, said, hey, let's he drove. So the show was in Pittsburgh, and my grandfather and our factory's in New Jersey. And so my grandpa, who is there from New Jersey, said, why don't you ride back with me in my van, and we'll go to the factory. We'll drop off all the stuff from the show. We'll go to the factory and work there for a few days. And so it ended up being this really memorable, special trip where I rode in a van with my grandpa from Pittsburgh to New Jersey. And we basically just told stories, and he told me, stories from the family archives. So some of them I probably shouldn't have heard. And after that trip, he confided in my aunt and the rest of the family that originally when my aunt hired me, he wasn't super thrilled about it. He was a little bit nervous to have, he wasn't sure what it would be like for me. I think he wanted me to experience something outside of the family business. He didn't want me to feel limited by it. But after that trip together, he said that was the best decision. It gave him new energy for the business. And so, yeah, it was.
So what's that been like over the decade? Because you spend a lot of time with your grandpa, and probably more than most people do.
Yep, I have. I lived with him for a summer, and we commuted to work every day together for a whole summer. That was a blast. And I shadowed him at our factory and just kind of learned how he – observed how he talks to people at the company. And it's been super challenging, and it's pushed me to have to learn to communicate more proactively. We have a business that's on the East Coast and the West Coast, so we're constantly in communication, flying back and forth across the country. And you have to check in with everybody in the family all the time and over-communicate what you're working on and over-communicate what's going on. And so that's been a good learning lesson in life about over-communicating. And
well, I think it's interesting because one of the things that people talk about is wanting privacy or not wanting having family, in your shorts, knowing everything about you. And I always understand that in theory, but in order for, the way our family dynamic works is that everyone is in each other's business all the time and knowing where everyone's going or where they're hanging out. Our vacations aren't just like secret vacations that everyone kind of knows what's going on. And I think, again, that's the positive and the negative, that there's something really grounding about having this group of people that are very tightly connected in your life. And then there is that part of you that always feels like, gosh, if I make this decision, what will the family say? Or if I make this move or do this thing, what will the family say? That there are pressures that go into also being that connected. And so I think because we're an individualistic nation and, you know, we're an immigrant nation, that people moved here to get away from, you know, probably long-term family oppression or, you know, governments that felt oppressive, that the whole kind of idea of our country is this individualistic, making it on your own, not being too closely tied or connected to anything. And yet what gives people a sense of grounding is that sense of history and having people know your story and know your business.
Yeah. And one of the family jokes, or I don't know if it's a joke, but one of the family things.
Truth.
Yeah. Is that you can't really go on vacation without doing a sales call.
True.
And even you, you're not directly working in the business day to day, but when you go places, you carry extra pencils with you and some, you know, brochures.
Always straightening up the product, like you said.
Right. Yeah. And anytime we go on vacation, you always kind of have to throw in a sales call. Even if you pay for the vacation completely on your own, it's part of the family kind of unspoken rule that you're always kind of on a sales call.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the challenges of it. I kind of jumped over back to the family business, but
because it always seems to be where things emanate from. And one of the other issues that the article in the New York Times brought up, the one about the family legacies, was that when you bring in spouses into the family, that also changes the family dynamic, that, you know, each member that marries into the family brings in their own history and their own stories. And how do families kind of take in new members, or, you know, how does the family change when new members join? And what was interesting in the articles, it talked about, I don't remember which family, actually has a family book or a story, kind of like a rules of engagement that they pass on to the new spouses so they kind of know what they're marrying into. And it struck me because I feel like our family very much takes in the spouses. And I wonder if we should have some sort of guidebook. How's it been for your husband, my son-in-law, like joining this massive group?
Deep sigh. No, he definitely feels a part of it. And one of the first things that I think he was intrigued about me when he first met me was that we have a family business. And he thought that was so fascinating and wanted to learn everything about the family business. And he had to kind of tone it down a little bit at the beginning because you can't be too excited about the family business. You kind of have to tread lightly at the beginning. But one of the things he learned quickly is that it's kind of sink or swim. You either jump on and you get excited about the games that we're playing or the crazy weird Easter egg hunt we're going to do where you have to perform. Mm-hmm. You either just jump in and have a good time with it, or you're going to be kind of fighting it emotionally, mentally, your rest of your life. So I think for him, it took a little to figure out the pace of our family, but he's right in there hanging out on work days with my grandpa. And
yeah, there is something, you know, again, everything has its good and its bad piece to it. There are trade-offs. When you are vested in the family story, you are vested all the time, and you might have to fight to maintain some of your identity or your own family traditions. And when I think about like the whole idea of working with families' systems and looking at patterns of behaviors and why do we look at family history and why does it matter today, one of the things that I found interesting, and Murray Bowen is the clinician that originally kind of recognized how we carry family stories on generation after generation. And for people that are struggling with anxiety or depression or confusion in their life or having setbacks, when they can see that they're part of a story that's bigger than themselves, it's very healing. And when you study that family history, quite often you might, especially in our culture and society today, we may only know our grandparents. I know a lot of young people only know their parents and their grandparents, might not even know their cousins. But when you do the work and kind of look at the bigger picture with second cousins or grandmother's sister or, you know, second cousin once removed, within that family system, according to Bowen, there are people that you will resonate with, that you will connect with, that become very profoundly important in your life, but you have to do the work. That there might not be anyone in your immediate family that you might think you feel like an outsider. A lot of people say, I feel like a stranger in my own family story. But if you look out into the far branches of your tree, there is someone that you could connect with that really changes your life. You know, my second cousin, Carol, who I've had on the show, and she lives in Nepal, and, you know, we grew up together, and then we lived our adult lives, and then we've reconnected. That's been a profound connection for me because we have so many similarities just in our personalities and the way we see the world and our lives. And so I've been much more encouraged to talk about it with my students who I have do a genogram in class and to say, look out there on the far branches, because if you have one person that you're related to that you can connect with, it opens up your whole sense of who you are. So when you look at your family tree, who do you see any connections out there? Have you ever thought about that?
Well, what is coming to mind is Kelly, my sister, mm-hmm. and how she has this very deep connection to Isabel, our great-grandmother, who she's never met.
True.
And that's because of the storytelling you've done, in a way, where you've kind of you tell her about her, who she was and how they're connected. And
similarities,
right.
And the traits. It is true.
And but that's because you're sharing, passing. It really, the responsibility to, if in order for this to happen, that the elders, you being an elder, have to really be committed to the storytelling of their family and repeatedly telling those stories to the kids of the family.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is my daughter, Kirsten Barrett. And our number is 805-781-3875. And we're talking about our experience in our family system and our family history. And I'd be curious to know about yours. What comes up when you think about your family story or legacy? And is there something good or bad? You know, when we look at family histories, it's always important to know, to pass on the stories to our children, warts and all, because the whole idea of history repeating itself is very true. And for our kids to know the warts of the family story is important in helping them understand where they might want to make different choices, or they might have a temperament that could get them into trouble. But then those great stories, the fun stories, give children and individuals a sense of belonging to something bigger than themselves. And especially at a time like now where we're so fractured, we're so disconnected with tech, even though technology makes us feel like we're connected to each other, it's splintering us more, and the fast pace of life and how difficult it is to just keep your families afloat, it's more important than ever to have some sort of grounding story that bonds your family, some sort of kind of mission statement or purpose. What do we stand for? What's important to us? What is something that we can count on every year to carry on as we go forward in our lives? Because when we feel alienated and kind of detached and just floating, it causes anxiety and depression and phobias to build up in us. So it's so important that families have that story. And it's interesting when you look at business today and marketing businesses and trying, you know, companies trying to get a foothold in the market, one of the marketing strategies I always talk about is the story. You have to have a story. Every company is looking for some story that people connect to that make them want to be to purchase that item.
Right. That's why they put pictures of the founders and, you know, on the back of packaging. Here's the people that created it, why we created it. Yeah, and it's neat having a product that has an automatic story. And we find ourselves having to repeat that story, even though our product's been on the shelves for decades now. We still are repeating that story, and we still are connecting with new customers who are blown away that we have a story. They are buying your story.
Right. And I remember when, from the time I was young, you know, my father understood that the importance of the family being out there in public and people knowing that it's a family business, that it wasn't a big corporation. It's just a little small group of people. And so I grew up going to conventions, talking to people, telling our story. And so it's interesting that that was always how we survived, but to see that becoming kind of a primary piece of how technology companies are trying to create a story, or Tom's Shoes, I'm trying to think of different companies and the stories that they sell. And why do people buy things that have a story? It's because when you buy something that has a story, it makes it you feel like that your purchase is grounded in something more than just spending money, mm-hmm. that your purchase actually has value, that help, you know, that goes towards a family, that people you can see and identify with, you'd rather support them than a faceless corporation. And so this whole idea of being a part of something bigger than ourselves gives us a sense of groundedness and connection that we all need. 805-781-3875 is our number. And Dawn, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Well, good morning. Or good afternoon, excuse me. I wanted to share a couple of things. One is that we have a family legacy, I guess you could say. My maternal grandfather was an optometrist, and my father became an optometrist, and my brother's an optometrist. But it was my father and my mother that began an organization where we provide eye care to underserved communities in international countries. And this is a family thing that we've been doing for about 30 years now. And this spring, we have cousins coming along. And I think it really brings back, you know, what our story is. But it also brings back what you were talking about earlier about having positive things to inspire us. And
yes.
This was something that I was taught through this experience, is that no matter how bad it seems in my life, you know, the 1 week out of the year that we would go and donate time for our eye care missions, it's like that was such a simple effort, really, and it changed people's lives, and it just puts a little bit of a hop in your step. And I think service is the key here.
Absolutely.
At the time when we feel a little bit down.
And Don, what's the name of your family's foundation?
It's called Eye Care International. And I could say that none of this would happen without an enormous amount of volunteers who are not related to the family, mm-hmm. but it is something that has been part of our family, and we participate, and we have a lot of great folks here locally, as well as back in my hometown in Illinois, that participate in these missions on an annual basis.
And what has that done for your family, just as a sense of identity?
Yeah, I guess that, you know, it... we just like to serve, and I think it makes each of us figure out how can we contribute, mm-hmm. you know, because we know that in the long run, even though contribution takes effort and all, that it's really a gift to yourself.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's kind of what I learned.
I also love that you have that family history of optometry going from generation to generation to generation, because... It's not that common anymore that we pass along our family work.
Businesses.
Yeah.
Yes. No, it's true. I'm very proud of my brother, and I kind of regret not picking up that mantle, but it wasn't my forte, I suppose, or at the time I thought. But I'm anxious to buy some of your pencils. So I like coming from a family that's worked together and tried to have longevity. I'm happy to support businesses like that.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate you taking the time to call and sharing your family story.
Thank you.
Have a
That's
wonderful
great
day.
Great show, Elizabeth. Thank you.
So that whole sense of the family having something that they look forward to that also makes them feel like they're contributing to the betterment of the world.
We can connect with that as a family business, because there are times I know that the families, that the businesses struggled back in the 90s when most companies in the U.S. were going to China and Mexico to produce products cheaper. My aunt turned to my grandfather and made a conscious effort to say, give me a shot. I want to keep this business alive. And she had the employees' best interest in mind when she made that decision. She was thinking about the jobs of people who worked at General Pencil, and really has worked hard to keep the business alive in tough times. And so I think about, even though it's not a foundation, it's a business that we run. It's also it's more than just, you know, collecting a salary every year. It's providing jobs, and it's creating a product that art supplies are something that people purchase, and it makes them feel better. It's healing. It's mm-hmm. rewarding, and our products are used in the National Portrait Gallery, and, you know, famous charcoal artists use our products. And there's something so much greater when you have a family business.
And there's also the people that have worked for General Pencil, right? There's generations of families mm-hmm. that have worked that aren't Weisenborns, but it's their family story too.
Yeah, we have one employee named Albert who's been there for over 50 years. Mary Ann Davis has been there for 60 years in our factory. And there's also, there are second generations of employees. Like one, there's a mother and her daughter working there right now. There's a husband and wife working in our factory right now. So that's pretty special. And the Mary Ann, who's been there 60 years, has actually technically worked at our company longer than my grandfather.
So she had to teach him a few things coming up through the business. And so today we've been talking about kind of the whole idea of family legacy and moving forward. And so you have a 2-year-old, my granddaughter, Georgia. And when you think about her life and your life as a family with Brian, what do you envision down the road? What are some of the things that you want for her or values? Do you see her being a 7th generation General Pencil employee, or what kind of the dreams you have moving forward to keep her connected?
I hope that she looks at her family and has just an immediate sense of comfort, and that she wants to just have a good laugh with her family. You know, to sit back and have the capacity to look at her family and think, those are my people. I want to go, for a hike with them. And I want her to look at her family and feel the way I do. Mm-hmm. In terms of the business, if she feels called to it, that would be wonderful. I hope that she finds something that she finds that gives her greater purpose. You know, some people can show up for work and not feel something greater from it, but I hope that she finds something that keeps her connected and grounded. I plan to make our family going forward feel like mine did growing up, where it was family first in this tight, connected inner circle where you feel like there is an unbreakable bond. And so I guess modeling that is the only way to do it.
and it's kind of the showing up part. And that was a couple of things in the research and the articles that kept coming back up, is that showing up is key. That even when it's inconvenient, or there are people that annoy you, or it's not the way you really want to spend your day, that you show up for the basketball game, or you help someone with a house remodel project, or you show up for the birthday party. But then carry that out on a bigger scale. You show up for the march if it's about a cause that you care about. You get up on that Saturday morning and you go, and you are part of the group. You know, you show up to the events, you show up to the city council meeting, you show up to support people who you feel like are being treated unfairly. It's like, it's in our standing up together that we actually have strength, whether it's within our own family, but within our community and our neighbors, when we see an injustice, to speak up. Because one person speaking up takes a lot of courage, but 1,000 people speaking up is power. You know, it's power, and it's a movement towards change. And with everything that's going on in the world, it's scary to speak up. And there are so many things going, how do we know where to put our energy? But I guess overall is to find something that makes you feel like you're being a part of something bigger than yourself, finding some place to put your energy that gives you a sense of pride and a sense of purpose and meaning, whether it's within your family or within your community or within the grander scale of what's going on in the country. Every one of us needs some place to put that feeling. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can find out more information on our Facebook page. The article about General Pencil Company is up there as well. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com and listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And if you subscribe to our podcast and take a little few moments to give us some feedback, that's always helpful. Thank you to my daughter, Kirsten, for being here today.
It was fun.
And thank you for being a part of this conversation week after week. I look forward to continuing our conversation and our inspiration for 2018 again next Tuesday.
We at the family reunion, telling jokes and playing spades. Uncle Dave is on the barbecue grill. Grandma bragging about the blanket she made for the new baby on her way. Even though the daddy ain't really ready, this child
she made her famous potato salad. Somehow it turns out green. Maybe it's all the scallions. Could be the celery. But oh, taking it one step a day, but in my heart I know it ain't that way.
What can I say? It's family. What can I say? It's family.
I've juicy been drinking. Again, ooh, it's only 1:30 in the afternoon. Everybody tiptoeing round her. We all know she's gonna be toe up soon. Saying all the things we like to say. Hope she gets around the cousin Lonnie. Cause we all know he got a little extra somebody on the side. But
what can you say? It's family.
What can you say?
What can you say? It's family.
Mickey and Steven are fine again. Move out the way. Somebody might get hurt. Oh, look at that. What happened is worse. They knocked over Eleanor's lemon cake. You know the one she